Friday night on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We got a lot to get into tonight. It's going to be a fun one, a quick little one-hour show before our weekend begins. We got a gauntlet of guests. Andrew Peters is going to join us up first in about 5 minutes to talk about the Leafs and their lack of snot last night. Of course, tee up the Buffalo Sabres, who are in town tomorrow night, but also tonight against Philly on Sportsnet 1. So we'll get a little bit of a preview on what to expect with them. Alvin Williams will come on around 6:30, talk about Scotty Barnes' historic start to his season, even though the Raptors are losing games. Scotty Barnes is a bright note. Tall task ahead with Wemby, pun intended. And it's the start of the NBA in-season tournament, which we will try to decipher for you and understand the task and the stake at hand if you do win that. And then John Buccigross will join us to wrap up our show, a little NHL whip around, of course, with him. The Hughes brothers are all on a massive tear. We'll give you the stats on that. And the Canucks might be Canada's best team. But with all that, before we get to all of our guests, last night, are the Leafs just the same old Leafs, Justin?
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, again, this is the thing with the Maple Leafs, is that if nothing changes when there are changes made, who do you look toward? And for me, that answer is Sheldon Keefe. And I don't know if, like, this is the day to go after Sheldon Keefe, or this is the day to be ultra, furious, or direct all your anger towards him, because, you know, the sky isn't falling just yet. But the Bertuzzi thing really sticks with me, because I don't think Tyler Bertuzzi is just suddenly a bad player. Scored 30 goals with the Red Wings a couple years ago, 10 points in 7 playoff games with the Boston Bruins last year. But at a certain point when the roster is changing and there are no changes, I feel like eventually you have to start looking at the coach. Like, why isn't the coach coaching towards Tyler Bertuzzi's strengths? It just seems like there's a problem with the onboarding process here with the Toronto Maple Leafs, because everyone who is most frustrating to deal with right now, like if you list those players, who are the players that are at the top of the list for fans in terms of
faces,
frustration?
Klingberg, Bertuzzi, Domi.
You could even go back to Jake McCabe if you really want
to. You could go back to Jake
McCabe. So if all the new players are the problems, then isn't the problem the process of getting these players into the system? I just feel like at some point we can't ignore that when changes are made, but nothing changes with the team.
It's tough because it's one of those conundrums where Tyler Bertuzzi is getting less and less ice, but he's also not doing enough on the ice to be proving that he needs more ice. But his fit on his line probably isn't the right fit. So it's all these conflicting factors, and maybe the easiest thing for Sheldon Keefe is to not play him, but the hardest thing might be trying to find the right fit for Tyler Bertuzzi. But we've gotten to a sample size that's big enough now where the collective fan base thinks that he's not a fit. Mm-hmm. But as you say, like, he hasn't just fallen off a cliff. Like, he has the skill set. He's been brought in for a reason. He's on a one-year deal. You'd think he'd be energized and fired up enough to try to earn a lot of money. It's really interesting. And I know that our colleague Justin Bourne wrote a great article about this too, like why Tyler Bertuzzi's in the doghouse, and that's on sportsnet.ca. But It's a tough spot for him to be in. It's a tough spot for Sheldon Keefe to be in. Is the easy answer to promote him?
I don't know if the answer is to promote him, but in my eyes, it's square peg, round hole. And if it's exclusively round holes for Sheldon Keefe, you have to be this way to play for me, then are you putting a ceiling on yourself? Are you putting a hard ceiling on what you're trying to do? I think the best teams have a bunch of personalities and different types of players that can do different things, and they fit together in a really positive way. The Texas Rangers feel like a team that did something like that. But if you want every player to be, A, before everything else, as defensively responsible as Cali Yarncroke, can you really be your best? Can you be the best team with what you have if you want everyone to be Cali Yarncroke first? And not to take shots at Cali Yarncroke, but he gets the promotion up to the top line because he's safe. And what's safe gotten you if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs? Yeah, some successful regular seasons. But at a certain point, you got to get the best from your guys. And they're not getting anything from Bertuzzi, from Domi, from Klingberg. And they're new guys who didn't do things the Kyle Dubas way, and I guess by extension, the Sheldon Keefe way.
So you think, let's plan for tomorrow night. Big game against Buffalo Sabres, trying to reignite that rivalry, coming off a point against the Boston Bruins, who are unbeatable, apparently. What would you do differently? Would you do anything differently come tomorrow night's lineups?
Maybe you're putting the Misfits together, if you want to call the Misfits the new guys, and just say, run wild, just do whatever. Like, that's what I would do. Just do, play your game. Like, do what feels natural, because what I want you to do is not working in this exact moment in time, at least for me, right? Like, if you're trying to make him do things the Sheldon Keefe way, or the Callie Yarncroke, Alex Kerfoot way, whatever you want to call it, where it's like, hey, they're going to take care of their own end first. If you want Tyler Bertuzzi to be that player, well, maybe he can't. And if you want to get something out of him, just go back to the basics for a guy like Tyler Bertuzzi. And it might be individual for everyone, but at some point they have to go back to instincts and basics and be who they are. But if they're not able to be who they are here, and they don't have use if they're just going to be, it's going to be the same old story over and over again, where they're just not doing what Sheldon Keefe wants them to do.
So that was definitely one of the stories of last night. Bertuzzi's fit has kind of been one of the stories of this season so far. We do have an audio clip, Keefe on Bertuzzi's struggles, pretty candid about his on-ice production or lack of production, being kind of pulled off the top two lines, demoted during the periods, and didn't play the last like 8 minutes of the game. We'll play that clip right now of Sheldon Keefe talking about Tyler Bertuzzi last night.
He just needs to simplify his game. Yeah, today we had a very simple plan, and he failed to execute that, so other guys had to take his place.
So simple plan. Oh, great band, too. But Sheldon Keefe says it's simple. It's just go out there and play your hardest, play your best. But seems,
you think that's what it is, though?
But that's what I'm saying. It seems like it doesn't seem to fit, because if it's a simple plan and he just goes out there and performs, why isn't it working, right? Like, is he being asked to do something outside of his own abilities? Is that where the conflict is?
It may be. I think we'd have to know what that plan is, mm-hmm. what priority one is on the ice for Tyler Bertuzzi. And maybe it would be something that would sound easy, but maybe he feels pressure. Hey, I got to perform. This is a contract year. I'm playing with Austin Matthews for as long as he did. Mm-hmm. I've got to do this. And maybe those things all don't jive with each other. But if it's simple plan and it's just like, hey, the only thing we want from you, Tyler Bertuzzi, is to exit the zone cleanly and responsibly. If that's the only thing we care about you doing, then what's the point? You didn't bring Tyler Bertuzzi in to be that. And if it is the simple plan and that's the only thing that really matters, my guess, it wouldn't be something offensive. It would be something defensive focused. And it would be about something that would be, hey, don't hurt us out there, rather than, hey, Tyler Bertuzzi, how can you help us? I think they should be trying to figure out that question. How is Tyler Bertuzzi, with his skill set, going to help us? Same with Max Domi, same with John Klingberg. Right now, they're identified as problems rather than solutions. And I think that's partly something that is on the coaching staff and is on the Maple Leafs for failing to find those avenues.
All right, before we get Andrew Peters in here in a few minutes to talk about the Buffalo Sabres, who we'll see in town tomorrow night against the Maple Leafs, and of course tonight against the Philadelphia Flyers. That's on 7 p.m. on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 1. He is already here. Look, that was just perfect timing. I manifested it. Andrew, I appreciate you coming on with us. After the Whistle podcast, Andrew Peters joins us now. We're talking about the Maple Leafs, and we started with Tyler Bertuzzi because we wanted to save the big juicy stuff for you. The lack of response to Marchand's dangerous hit on Timothy Liljegren last night. Was it a missed opportunity for the Maple Leafs to prove that they're different, that they have snot, and that they have some grit this year?
I thought that's what the whole mission was. Don't they have Domi and Bertuzzi and Reeves, and aren't they the big bad Leafs now?
That's what we heard. That's what we were promised in preseason, but where is it?
Well, okay, so that's an interesting play, though. It is. So I haven't. I saw what happened, but I haven't been following the feedback from, you know, the hit. Are people wanting? Did they want retribution on Marchand for that hit?
If not retribution, being angry on the Leafs bench. I think that's what people are most angry about, is there's nothing on the
like
ice.
Emotion.
But other than Ryan Reeves trying to talk to him, I mean, it was basically the same old Leaf thing where liberty was taken and everybody else looked the other way.
You got a lot of high price egos there. And what is Ryan Reeves supposed to fight every battle? You know, are these other guys supposed to, I mean, every team, who's on the ice? It's the guys who are on the ice that need to show up. But the problem I have is I've seen the hit from multiple different angles. I don't know. Do people think that he slew-footed him? I mean, I feel like he was stopping and the guy just kind of fell into the boards, like tripped up. I don't know. I mean, Marchand should have his head punched in every night anyway. I don't even know. I can't even believe that it takes that long. It takes a hit like that for somebody to not address him or even try to identify him in any game. But, this is what I was expecting from the Leafs, though. I thought the Leafs were a much more physical, intimidating team that teams didn't want to mess with. But they're not playing very well either, are they?
No, they're not playing well. And they're not delivering on that promise of toughness. Like, we just have not seen it. It seems like it's all sort of reverted back to the default, which is, hey, we're here to play hockey, and all that stuff doesn't really matter. And you're right about the Marchand thing. Like, yeah, it was a really dangerous play. It may have been dirty. Was it, like, over the top and something that deserved, you know, a melee from breaking out then and there? Like, I'm not really sure, but it was a dangerous play that hurt someone. And if you want to change identity, which they've talked about changing identity, well, that usually necessitates a response, and we didn't see a response yesterday. But I want to ask about how...
Well, you know, here's the thing, though, too. It's a lot of it comes down to... A lot of it comes down to time of the game, too. Circumstance, close game. I mean, this was my job for 6 years in the league, was kind of figuring out the right time to go and pay somebody back. And then there are things where it's required payback immediately, or it's a situation where, okay, let's see what really happened, get a better understanding of it. We know who did it, and we can find him anytime we want on the ice, because he's on the ice all the time. So there's always those, and see how the game plays out and see how the game goes. I mean, you know, this early in the season, you know, you want to be giving up power plays and points on retribution on something where you don't even know how the refs are going to call it or how the league's going to see it or what really happened. Plays these days happen so fast that, you know, it's not like the old days where a guy gets hit out of the corner of your eye and you go and you jump in there and do something about it. Those days are over, because there's so many different camera angles that you almost feel now that you are trusting the league to police the players and almost say, look, okay, we're not going to do anything about it right now because we don't want to cost us the game, but hopefully the league will take care of it afterward, or the refs will take a look at it at the intermission and say, you know, I missed a call there. And, you know, depending on which way the refs are betting that night, maybe they decide to, you know, throw a call your way. But, you know, the game has changed so much where the mindset has to change. So that's why this conversation is very interesting to me, because in my time, it was forget the game, go and get the guy. I mean, I played in many of those games where who cares about the score? We are going to let the entire league know that this player is not going to do that to our player of any player. So there's more to it than just the message last night against the Bruins to the fans. It's a league-wide thing, and maybe it was a huge opportunity missed. But then again, that's also where, you know, you need the league to almost take care of that on its own. So it's kind of a double-edged sword or a slippery slope, whichever cliche you want to use, because, you know, the Leafs are in a tough spot. They need to win games, right? They don't need to be worried about being the toughest team in the league. They'll have other opportunities to do. They play Boston again. They're going to play Boston again, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you pick and choose your spots. It's a long season, and, you know, you figure it out from there. But I'm looking forward to the game tomorrow night between the Leafs and Sabres. First Leafs-Sabres game in years that I've been looking forward to see.
We're going to get into that in 1 second, but I want to ask you one more question on this matter. You mentioned a lot of people who are involved in that sort of thing last night, whether it be yourself, whether it be, you know, the opposition, whether it be the league, the officials, whoever's going to take care. You mentioned discretion and how you had discretion, right? You could take your time. You could wait for the next game. You could wait for the next period. You could do it immediately. Whenever you felt like it was necessary, you would jump in. You had discretion. And that's all well and good. And I do think a guy like Ryan Reeves would have that discretion now. But how involved is a coach in the toughness thing? We were just talking about how, you know, players change, but nothing changes under Sheldon Keefe to a certain respect. And this team has tried to get tougher and gets more toughness and muscle, but still the same old thing applies. So when you're using discretion, that's okay. But is the coach have a voice in that discretion as well?
Not anymore.
Why
not anymore?
That?
This isn't the 70s, 80s anymore, man. It's because if Sheldon Keefe, think about this. If Sheldon Keefe says, all right, someone's got to go after him, and someone goes after him and really hurts Marchand, well, Sheldon Keefe is in a lot of trouble because that's borderline abounding. That's just, you have to excuse my next phrase here. That's just how soft we are right now in society, where it's like a coach can't say, you know, eye for an eye, somebody better get him, where that's kind of like in my head, I'm thinking, man, that's free reign for you to go and punch that guy's head off his shoulders. But the problem is you just can't anymore. I mean, you just can't do that. So, I mean, some of these players have to be, you know, pretty confused with what they're allowed to do. And, you know, I'm looking at the lineup with the Leafs right now. I mean, Bertuzzi was in the lineup. Reeves was in the lineup. You know, Domi was in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like they had guys in the lineup that could definitely respond to something like that. And the coach can't do it anymore, though, to not get too far off topic, because he's going to get in a lot of trouble. But if a player does it, he's going to get in a lot of trouble. So that's why guys like Marchand get to skate around completely unscathed these days, you know, because of the rules. I mean, everyone gets in trouble for the guy that responds to that guy. But in reality, Marchand needs to have his nose punched off his face.
We're chatting with Andrew Peters of After the Whistle podcast. Okay, so let's talk about those Buffalo Sabres, because they're up tonight against Philadelphia, their second game against them in 2 days. We'll have that on Sportsnet at 7 p.m. And then, of course, tomorrow night, Leafs and Sabres. You said it. It's a game that you've circled on the calendar. And I think a lot of people, including myself, are excited about this Buffalo Sabres team. They're 500 right now, but won three games in the last four games, I believe. So they're on their way up. But what was with the slow start here? Just a little bit of a Tage Thompson turnaround we've seen in the last couple days might be what's going to will them with a better record here down the stretch.
They're playing really well right now, although, you know, I mean, they gave up a bunch of goals on a few shots, not as many shots the other night. Listen, this is a team. The reason why I'm excited to watch this game was because the Leafs were supposedly such an improved team in terms of toughness. And I feel like the Sabres and the Leafs, their rivalry over the last few years have kind of died because the Sabres have sucked. But, you know, I've wanted to see what a tougher Leaf team can do to the Sabres. And simply because I think the Sabres are soft. And I think that's kind of been their MO for a number of years. And I wanted the Sabres to sign Ryan Reeves big time back when he was a free agent, and they didn't. And that's a guy that I think can change the tempo of a game. He's a guy that can control a Domi or a Bertuzzi if they play against them and they're playing hard. A Brady Tkachuk and those types of players in Ottawa. I mean, and just for that sole reason alone was to see if the physicality difference between the Leafs and Sabres was really that much. Because I think the talent level is getting to the point where it's almost equal.
Yeah, the talent for sure led by Tage Thompson. It was a season of Tage last year, big breakout season, 94 points. He's turned it on the last couple of days. But for you, is this the Tage that we should expect, a guy that is fighting for 95, 100 points every season? Or was last year kind of like a little bit of a tease in a sense?
No, and that's the problem, right? Everyone sees these guys sign for big contracts. And they have career years, and they think they have to go and do more. Where in my train of thought is, if he, let's say he gets 75 or 80 points, but he's an unbelievably sound defensive forward now in the league, and he's killing penalties, and he's on the game or is on the ice late in games when the team's up by a goal, trying to defend. Right? I mean, you know, you may have to sacrifice a few points on the offensive side to help your team be better in the defensive side of the game, where this team has lacked for years. So, and I've seen that from him. I mean, he looks like he's a a far more committed player defensively, you know, standing in front of shots. He's been really good on that penalty kill this year, which is a new role for him with Jordan Greenway. And I mean, that's where you get the value out of these guys, because the offense is there. I mean, you watch against Philadelphia, you give him a chance 5 feet with the puck and he's going to create something. But what does he do without the puck? What kind of a star is he that plays without the puck? You have players in Toronto that have the same questions going on about them. How do they play without the puck? Are they reliable on the ice at certain times? Everyone praises these star players for their offense, but, you know, again, you know, for years, there's a guy out in Edmonton who was criticized for his 200-foot play. Alexander Ovechkin, same thing. I mean, what can your star players play defense? That's it. It comes down to that alone. So I don't care about Tage's points. If they're winning games and he's not on the score sheet, but he's played 25 minutes against the other team's top line, and the other team's top line didn't do anything that night, that's as good as Tage having 3 or 4 points in a night, in my opinion.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see them go head-to-head tomorrow night. We've had this one circled on the calendar as well. It'll be fun because I'm sure there'll be some Sabres fans in the crowd as well. So that always makes Scotiabank Arena a pretty fun one. We appreciate you coming on, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks very much, guys. The two teams are actually good, right? So that's
a difference.
Makes a bit of a difference.
For
sure. They're competing for something, you know? So, well, good luck to you guys.
Thanks so much. We'll definitely chat down the road. That's Andrew Peters of After the Whistle Pod. And the Maple Leafs host the Buffalo Sabres tomorrow night at Scotiabank Arena. We got the Sabres. You can watch them as a little preview tonight against the Flyers. That's at 7 p.m. That will be on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 1. They beat the Flyers just a couple days ago. So a little bit of a rematch. See if they can do it twice in a row.
Yeah, I guess we shouldn't expect any flippers to be flung off. He's calling that team soft. We're worried about the Leafs' toughness. I guess that just isn't a thing between these two teams. But maybe it'll just be goal scoring. And I guess we'll be okay with that in the end. I do want to circle back to what I asked him about, you know, Keefe's role in the toughness. Mm-hmm. I'm not suggesting this should be Greg Williams, Bounty Gate 2.0. But if Brad Marchand is doing Brad Marchand things, is it too much to ask of a coach to be like, hey, are we still the team that lets Brad Marchand run around? Like, if that's just said in the dressing room between periods or said on the bench, I don't think there's any malice or harm in that. Mm-hmm. It's challenging your team to not let Brad Marchand be the story and do whatever he wants to do on the ice. And I don't know if that is being said or not, but it doesn't seem like a team still, despite the change in philosophy and the need for snot, that is worried about applying said snot. And why is that? I don't know. But I do feel like coaches play a role in that.
They got a big opportunity to respond tomorrow night. Like, if they come out hard in that first period, lay a couple of hits, like, you don't need to fight anyone on the Sabres, but you need to show that this narrative that's now going to go through the cycle of news for a day and a bit isn't who you are. I know they're hearing it. I know that they're probably feeling it. So tomorrow, get out there, play a physical first period, and show the Buffalo Sabres that you are not going to be pushed around. I have the Sabres tonight's game in my pick, which I did terribly yesterday, so I apologize. I went 0-for-2 on my parlay. My homer's parlay was the opposite. So if you picked my picks, you should have flipped them. Whoops. So time now before Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. I'm going for Sabres tonight. I believe that they're a much better team than the Philadelphia Flyers. They're going to be looking to make this 2 in a row against them. So I'm going to go Sabres on the puck line, parlayed with the over, a big goal scoring team. And I think that they're going to want to get on the score sheet early and often. So Sabres -1.5 plus the over is +310 for me.
Wasn't your night, but Victor Wembanyama grinded out a double-double for me at +360. So pretty happy about that. I have a similar pick. Mm-hmm. I got the Devils tonight -1.5 plus over 6.5 in their game against the St. Louis Blues. The Devils have not hit they haven't played an under game yet all year. The Devils are involved in high-scoring games. St. Louis doesn't score, but I'm not really worried about it. I think there's going to be enough goals for New Jersey, maybe not to cover it, but on the second half of back-to-back, maybe they give up a couple, but score at will like they have all season. Devils to win in the same sort of bet you have, -1.5, and the over is 6.5 is +350.
Okay, I love it. You can catch my game, Philly and Buffalo, at 7 p.m. on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 1, and yours is on 360 at 8 p.m. We'll take a break. We'll be back on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590 Fan with Alvin Williams to talk about those Raptors and Scotty Barnes.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back into the Fan Pregame. Justin Cuthbert and Ailish Forfar. Busy weekend of sports ahead, including the start of the play-in tournament.
I can't wait.
Not the play-in tournament, sorry. It's the in-season tournament.
I also
they
can't
really
wait
have
for
to
that.
Brand these better so that I can understand what they are as they begin. But the in-season tournament begins this weekend. Do you have in-season tournament takes?
I just can't wait to see all the new courts. I think it's actually...
The courts is what you're excited for?
I can't
that's,
wait to see the courts.
That's a win for the NBA, is that
they got me hooked on the courts.
Are what's most exciting. I actually saw a great idea from Tyrese Haliburton today about the in-season tournament. If it was worth a playoff spot, if you win the in-season tournament, would it be worth being really fired up for? Would all these teams be incentivized to play their best, to be at their best, to care about the in-season tournament? And if it was worth a playoff spot, I think that would be the case. We'll start with that with our next guest, Alvin Williams, Raptors Sportsnet analyst. Alvin, thanks for joining us. What are your thoughts on the in-season tournament? And if it was worth a playoff spot, would that be a good thing for you?
I'm still excited to see just the outcome and just see the just everyone's approach. I think there's a lot of excitement. I think the players are really into it. And that was one of my concerns, is like, were the players really going to buy into this new concept or this new idea of having an in-season tournament? But I think they're going to be really competitive, and it's something that I'm excited to see. As far as the playoff berth, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what else needs to be done to bring excitement to it. I coming into a season, a lot of times you have an idea of what teams are playoff teams. So if those teams are already understood to be playoff teams, will they fight as hard to be in the playoffs when they probably will be a playoff team? So you just don't know. But I think ultimately you want competitive matchups. And then at the end of the day, when it goes to Vegas, you want those superstars playing. You want the better teams in the tournament and no surprises. And surprises are sometimes good, but at the end of the day, I think I'm more excited just to see how everyone approaches it and what the outcome will be.
The Raptors don't play their first in-season tournament game until Friday the 17th, but we do see the beginning of this tonight with some other NBA games. So things to consider when the Raptors' turn does arrive. Let's talk about this current Raptors team. Scottie Barnes has been a very bright star to start this. He's got 20-plus points his last five games. He's already setting records along with some of the names like Larry Bird, Giannis, Anthony Davis, like in terms of players that have gotten to 100-plus points, 50-plus rebounds, 25-plus assists, and 10-plus blocks in the first five games of the season. He's on that list. He has come out like shot out of a cannon. So what's different about Scottie Barnes this time around? Is it his usage, or is it just a new Scottie Barnes that we've seen through this offseason?
I think you see a Scottie Barnes is in his third year, and he has the talent. He has the tools to be a very, very good player. And it takes time. And, you know, he's averaging 15 points his first 2 years, right, or close to 15 points. And now that's going to boost up because he's learning the game. He's becoming more comfortable. And even the style of play, it suits him well because it's a spread out offense. It's a passing, moving offense where it's going to give him opportunities. But more importantly, I just believe he has that confidence and that understanding of how to attack the game from a scoring standpoint. We know he can pass the ball. He plays multiple positions on defense. He brings the energy. Those are all the special things that I've always considered Scottie Barnes to have. Now, the scoring piece is going to be, it's a process, and he's doing a really good job of becoming a more consistent scorer early in the season because he's attacking and because he's realizing his spots on the floor. So he's just going to continue to grow. A lot of times we get impatient with young players when they show promise so early, but it's a process, and I've seen it time over time where some of the greats, it took them some time to learn the NBA game and really fall in line with how they're producing. And he's doing a great job so far this season.
Yeah, the stat that Ailish mentioned, I mean, to me, that's just impact. It's impact all over the court. It's impact on the success or failure of your team. to this point. So I see impact, but I also see ownership. And I'm wondering, like, what ownership stems from. Yeah, going from year two to year three, maybe there's more ownership just naturally there. Changes to the team with Fred VanVleet leaving in the offseason. Maybe just Darko Rajakovic telling him, hey, this is your team. What do you think the strongest force is there with Scotty Barnes owning what the Raptors are doing?
Just maturity and having that belief that it is his team, or, you know, growing into that role. Again, this is his third year, very young player, only 1 year in college. And a lot of times, you know, back in the day, you would get that leadership quality and you would get that maturity because you would play 3 or 4 years in college. So you've learned a lot of those things that could help you be a better professional. But when you're so young now, these young kids, they don't have that idea. Everything is me. And you're trying to figure it out to become the best and to become, you know, to achieve your goals. So then when you get into that position, you still have that habit of me. But as you get older, as you see Scotty, like, he understands it doesn't have to be me, because you're going to need other guys around you. And I'm sure conversations in the off season and, you know, even currently that's given him or making him feel even more empowered to take that ownership role and take that responsibility. And once you do that, that's just going to set the tone for everyone else to follow. As long as, and the most crucial thing is doing it consistently. You have to do it every single day. You have to show, not just on the court as a leader, off the court, when you're traveling, you know, practice. So it's still going to be a process, but I just think he has that conversation. The communication is there, and he has that confidence to believe, like, this is my team, and I'm going to lead, and I'm going to take ownership and accountability.
Yeah, what I like best about the stat that Ailish just mentioned, Scotty Barnes, 100-plus points, 50-plus rebounds, 25-plus assists, and 10-plus blocks in the first 5 games of the season. Giannis is also on that list. Giannis did it in his 9th season. Scotty doing it in his 3rd season is very, very impressive. So Fred VanVleet's going to be a story for the bulk of the season just because we're transitioning out of the Fred era and into the Dennis Schroeder era for as long as that lasts. But if you compare those two, Schroeder's doing a pretty good job filling in for the production that Fred leaves behind. What have you liked most about Dennis Schroeder's start with the Raptors?
I like the way he's controlling the game, you know, not in the locker room. Me not being in the locker room or in practice, I don't know the leadership piece of how he approaches that, but he's showing a lot of leadership on the floor. You know, he's controlling the tempo of the game. He's playing defense. He's also seems like he's holding himself accountable. I know even going into the game last night against the Sixers, he wanted to, you know, really control Tyrese Maxey on the defensive end. And I thought he did a great job. And, you know, he and OG Anunoby, but those are the things I'm seeing him do. You know, I've heard a lot about him early in his career when he was with Atlanta and then other places as well. And it seems like he's more mature as a player. And that happens. And he's been in a lot of big games, played with mega stars. So he can bring all of that experience to this Toronto Raptors team. And it seems like he's doing that. And he's another player that I feel like he has the trust of a coach. And he feels that, and he's out here playing some of his best basketball that I've seen him play in his already good career.
Alvin, how can the Raptors bench be more impactful? We've seen this issue throughout the first couple games where they get an opportunity to play and the progress, the momentum starts to go downwards. Is there a tweak that Darko Rajakovic could do, or is there someone that needs to step up so then these minutes aren't lost?
It's tough. It's tough, especially so early in the year. Everyone's trying to get on the same page. Everyone's trying to figure out their roles. Everyone's trying to, you know, do what the coaches are asking them to do with a new style that's presented to them. But I think some things that can alleviate some pressures for the bench is, you know, a lot of times we get caught up in saying different units or the second unit. I think a lot of times it's more a rotation. And when you do that, I'm sorry, when you have a rotation and you have certain players playing with maybe a Scotty Barnes or a Pascal, you have Malachi Flynn playing with those guys, there's not a lot of pressure on him to do things from the offensive standpoint, or you have Pirtle in the back and defensively you can help some of the players. So I think just finding out the matchups and finding out the rotation that would be most beneficial to everyone. And then once those players start becoming more and more comfortable with one another and getting their feet under them, then maybe they can go out there and perform at a higher level. But right now, I think more than just putting a unit out there, is mixing and matching different lineups and seeing how that works.
Oh, it's a big weekend for the Raptors because they're in San Antonio to deal with Victor Wembanyama on Ooh. Sportsnet. It's a very, very one of the most exciting single games of the Raptors season. And Wembanyama just is coming off a monster night with a double-double. Was it 38 points? Like, just a monster night for Victor yes. Wembanyama in a back-to-back versus the Phoenix Suns. It looks like it's taken him just a couple games to reach a pretty dominant level in the NBA. What's impressed you most, and what are the Raptors dealing with Sunday with Wemby?
I mean, he's just somebody, you know, somebody you look at guys and you say, he's very skillful for his size. He's just skillful, and he's big. He's a big guy, but he has the skill. So it's not like, you know, you're just comparing him to other bigs. You're comparing him skill-wise to some of the best in the league from a skill standpoint. And his ability to move, his ability to he's not clumsy, he's not flat-footed. He can play multiple positions again on defense. And a lot of times the guys at that size, they can't do everything. And he's just somebody that's proven that he can do everything from the outside offensively, inside. He can finish around a rim. He can handle a basketball. So it's very early. It's very early. It's a team that doesn't have many expectations. So there's a lot of things that come into play with that from a psychological and a preparation standpoint that he hasn't had to face yet. But as far as how he's playing, he's almost untouchable. Now you want to see it become consistent, and it's still early again, but he's doing everything, and he's not disappointing any of his critics or anybody that had a projection of him, because he's stepping up to the plate, and he's somebody that's very special. He's a generational talent, no doubt about it.
It's going to be a fun game to see them go head-to-head. Tall task for the Raptors, to say the least. Alvin, we appreciate you coming on. Enjoy the games this weekend, and we'll chat soon.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thanks so much. Alvin Williams, Sportsnet Raptors analyst. I was thinking, it's only a couple days since Halloween. They probably have some of those costumes laying around that's like you stack two people. Like mm-hmm. you stand on someone's shoulders, and it's like a very tall person with stilts. I think the Raptors could probably grab one of those and stack like OG and, I don't know, name someone else, and they could almost be able to block him.
Yeah, I mean, OG's been getting a lot of buzz for his start, at least defensively.
If you stacked someone on top of OG?
He might. I don't know if the movement will be what OG needs to keep up with Wemby there, but I thought you were thinking about like the next couple's costume would be
that's a good
Wembanyama. But I'm
Did
interested
you see a Slender
see...
Man costume?
Yeah, it was...
Oh my goodness, that creeped me right out.
Yeah, it was a good one. I'm curious to see what OG looks like trying to deal with Victor Wembanyama on Sunday, because yeah, he did well against Joel Embiid, but Joel Embiid is not Victor Wembanyama in terms of you know, the obvious physical tools that Wemby has that no one else almost in NBA history has. So tall task. Yeah, you're right, for the Raptors and for OG Anunoby Sunday in San Antonio.
So Raptors 0-2 against Nick Nurse. They don't face them again until December.
I got an asterisk on the second one.
Why is that?
Second half back-to-back. They were waiting for him.
Sometimes you get put in a position, you just got to grind it out, Jesse.
I understand that, but like that was it. That was always a tough
spot. You're saying that
was
a scheduled loss, like the Maple Leafs when they came home against the Kings.
It was. I do not give any excuses to the Maple Leafs.
Well, what's the difference?
It was not the second half of a back-to-back.
Yeah, but
it was just
the end
of a long
road trip, and everyone was
if
tired.
If you got a day to recover, you're okay. The Raptors just beat Milwaukee the night before, had to travel. That was a schedule loss.
I agree.
You're not willing to give them the asterisk.
I am. I mean, they've got two more opportunities to play Nick Nurse later on in the year.
Got to get at least one victory.
You need to. You cannot let Nick Nurse be the new Dwayne Casey to this franchise. You can't have him winning and winning. Especially when the Raptors were at home the first time around, you got the big tribute. Now it's just, there's no niceness left, okay? No more tributes. Win some games. We'll get John Bucci-Gross here in just a little bit to talk about tonight and the rest of the weekend. But I wanted to read the stat about the Hughes brothers for you.
Okay. I'm always interested in the Hughes brothers.
They should rename the NHL the National Hughes League. The NHL, because currently Jack leads the NHL in points. Mm-hmm. Quinn leads the NHL defenseman in points. And Luke is tied for the lead in points among rookies.
What would
Can you
be
imagine
the most
being another brother of that family?
Yeah, a lot of pressure. What would be the most? What would be the most surprising piece of hardware? Would it be Luke getting the Calder from Bedard, Quinn getting the Norris from Makar, or Less Hughes surprising. Getting the Hart Trophy from Connor McDavid? We should ask our next guest that.
John
Buchertras of ESPN. John, thanks for jumping on with us. If it came down to you, the most surprising one, if one of the individual awards is going to go to a Hughes brother in the most surprising fashion, which one would be the most far-fetched in your eyes?
Probably Luke. I think he has the most competition. It's probably usually going to go, although defensemen tend to get a lot of respect in the Rookie of the Year voting when it's close, because I think the voters know how difficult a position it is. But Jack is certainly off to an MVP start for sure. So, you have to build that foundation early in a season, usually with all the competition there is now, all the offense. And so I would say that, and Quinn, again, off to a great start. So I would say Luke would be probably the one most likely to win the big award.
Imagine having all three of them there at the awards in Vegas next year on the ballots. It would be pretty crazy. Imagine being their parents.
I would be.
What a treat that would be. All right, let's look backwards just once here at the Boston Bruins. Obviously, the Maple Leafs faced them last night. They are now 9-0-1. They seem to not want to lose any games in regulation. So what happens first? The Bruins lose in regulation or the Sharks win a game?
Yeah, boy, that's a tough one. I got a Shark game a week from Tuesday.
Oh,
they're
boy.
Playing the Panthers. So, that should be a big ratings winner for ESPN Plus, late night Sharks Panthers. It's hard to believe. Obviously, the Sharks want to finish last in the league. They want the best chance at the first pick in Macklin Celebrini. But obviously, you'd like to kind of do it with a few wins in there. It's tough. But yeah, the Bruins are really, really a good story. Losing Krejci and Bergeron and having to trade Hall and Foligno for the cap, and people just weren't sure about them if they'd have enough offense. But man, they are scoring goals. They still have the same goalies. They still have a good D. Some surprising rookies. Continued development of Pavel Zacha, who's like a real NHL player now after being kind of a disappointment in that strong draft, that 2015 draft. So it's a great story. Yeah, probably the Bruins, but you probably want to take the Bruins loss first, I think, or the Sharks will win before the Bruins. It's going to be close. It's going to be really close.
Yeah, that one is going to be tight, and it doesn't say much about the San Jose Sharks, of course, but it does say a lot about the Boston Bruins. I mean, Jim Montgomery was obviously celebrated for his season because it was a historic one, winning the Jack Adams. But if you lose Bergeron and Krejci and you still have the same amount of success, we might be looking about doing it again. But if the same thing is true for Boston, well, it's that they kind of have that big brother thing going on with the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs were advertised as different this year. Last night, did you see anything different about them after Brad Marchand takes a liberty? There's an injury and there's really no response.
Yeah. Toronto just does not have a very impressive roster in my mind. The bottom six, the defensive core. I mean, even the Bruins, all their injuries last night, it's like, I'm not sure if I would have traded the Bruins defensive core for the Maple Leafs straight up last night.
With three AHLers, too.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, because, I saw Mason Lorai play college last year for Ohio State. We had him in the tournament, so I knew how good he was. He's a tall, rangy, skill guy who I don't think is going to play any more minor league games. I know it's only one game, and they have a glut back there with Forbert and Grizzlick, but that'll probably precipitate a trade quicker now than they had planned to because of how good Lorai looks. But, Hampus Lindholm, he might be the best defenseman on Toronto. I think a lot of people would take him before Morgan Riley. It's a roster that I think they're in a tough shape. Brad Treliving and Brendan Shanahan got to really think about this. I wonder if they're going to act quickly, like with Bertuzzi. They could flip him, maybe trade him to try to figure out a different piece, find him a home and try somebody else there. That is not working yet. Again, it's early, so they have time for sure. They're still a 100-point team probably and will make the playoffs easily. But, it's just not a roster you think can run deep. But, again, if Matthews and Marner – just in Nylander are all scorching at the same time come playoffs, it might be enough. I mean, those guys are so that good up front, especially when you add Tavares in the mix as well. So obviously that's been the plan, try to get these guys scorching at the right time and have enough stuff around them Obviously, they'll gain cap space as the year goes on. I assume they'll add a pretty good defenseman and a pretty good forward before the trade deadline. So it's not – none of these teams are complete as they are yet, very few of them. So we'll give them time. But, again, it didn't look all that impressive to me.
The team that surprised most of Canada, the Vancouver Canucks, I know we mentioned Quinn Hughes a second ago, but how have they got to this point where they are one of the best teams in this country? Is it Rick Tocchet and his job there on the bench that's ignited this Canucks team to be something pretty good?
Well, they have two superstars, and you know, Elias Pettersson is an absolute superstar now. He's absolutely arrived as a full-grown adult, and so has Quinn Hughes. I mean, these are when you have a superstar defenseman, a superstar forward. That's a great start. And then again, how much stuff do you have around them? And they got some stuff, you know, with Besser and Miller's playing great. And so there's stuff there. And of course, the goalie's good. But I'm certainly, you know, that whole organization. Obviously, they made the change to Jim Rutherford. He reimagined the whole front office. It's really an interesting front office. Obviously, Cammy Granato's a part of that. And they just, you know, once they brought Tocchet in last year, that's Jim's guy, that's Rutherford's guy. And it just, that can take some time to get some traction. So everybody kind of sits up straight and says, okay, these guys are in charge. You know, Jim Rutherford has that kind of presence about him. And that's not going to happen right away. So just to add Tocchet to that mix, and when he has the back of the GM, and these are two kind of alphas, you know, really take charge guys. Everybody else better get in line. And so I think the group has. But like I said, that's some really high-end talent there that's kind of come together at the right time. And then you get that momentum, you get that buzz, and then there's just an electricity going to practice and an electricity going to the games. You built that early momentum. Hockey's the most emotional sport there is. So when you feel good, you feel good. And when you feel bad, you feel crappy. And so right now they're feeling good. And if they can ride that and build up a foundation of points here, you know, right up to Christmas, then they're in great shape to make the postseason. And then everything changes and they can really start to think about their roster and what kind of force they can be. Probably not, I don't know if they're quite in that Dallas, Vegas, you know, the big Western Conference teams, Colorado, even L.A., probably the fourth best team in the West. But at least, you know, with the age of the group they have, they're trending up for the rest of the decade in Vancouver.
Yeah, Golden Knights just still pretty surprising. No cup fatigue, a 10-0-1 start. Canucks still a couple points behind them. But it's really promising to see Vancouver with a great start. Speaking of great starts, Dartmouth up tied 2-2 against QPAC right now going into the second. So I'm cheering for my guys, my Go Big Green. I had to make sure I mentioned that because I know you're a big college hockey guy. So I'm looking for the Big Green win tonight.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Reid Cashman, one of the best players in Quinnipiac history, and he was an assistant for Rand Pecknold for their first two national championship tries. They lost their first two. They won last year. He's the head coach at Dartmouth, so it's Pecknold against Cashman tonight. Reid also coached for Washington in the NHL as an assistant as well. So yeah, he's that's I got my eye on that one. I'll check that out when we're done on the old ESPN Plus.
I knew you'd be checking it out. We appreciate your time. Always great to get a chance to chat. And look forward to that big San Jose Sharks game against the Florida Panthers next week.
Well, I got Blue Jackets Dallas first.
Okay,
next Thursday,
that's a little bit better.
Yeah, Dallas is a definite Stanley Cup contender, and looking to see Adam Fantilli in person.
There you go. Thanks, John. We appreciate it. All the best. Yeah. John Buccigross of NHL on ESPN. That's fun. You got a little Dartmouth connection there.
Yeah, you're live streaming over there.
I might be just split screen our doc and Dartmouth men's hockey against QPAC.
It's not San Jose and Florida, but we got a couple good games on
tonight.
Jersey and St. Louis, 8 p.m. Sportsnet 360, and then we'll be throwing soon here to Philadelphia and Buffalo. A little tease for Buffalo tomorrow night, hockey night in Canada versus the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll keep an eye on that one for sure.
And the in-season tournament starts tonight. We have that Memphis
and Portland.
But the Raptors
got to wait.
Yeah, Memphis and Portland at 10 p.m., though. You can check that out on Sportsnet 1.
Get a lay of the land first.
Lots of good stuff. And we get to see Wemby on Sunday.
Another big sports weekend.
It's going to be a good one. We appreciate everyone for tuning in. A fun week. Friday night, though. Like, we're last ones in the office grinding.
Yeah, it's a bit of a ghost town around
here. It's worth it, though. It's worth it. That was the Fan Pregame, Ailish and Justin. Everybody have a great weekend. We'll be back Monday for another fun sports week.